Well, our next guest, Susan Packard, co-founded HGTV, and she sold it in 2018 for $15 billion. In her new book, Fully Human, Three Steps to Grow Your Emotional Fitness in Work, Leadership, and Life, Susan details and shares what she learned about building and maintaining shared responsibility, trust, and respect, how to identify and align with supportive and nurturing cultures. Oh, and things like the importance of humor and the need for moral courage to put the ego aside. Lessons we can all use both at work and in life to be more grounded, present, and productive. Susan Packard, welcome to The Mountain
Thank
Life.
Thank you.
Great
to Delighted to be here.
I'm so glad you wrote this book, and I'm so glad that you're saying that things like trust and empathy in the workplace are trumping the climbing the ladder, clawing your way to the top sort of thing. That really does seem so archaic, but you say it so well in your book.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate hearing that. Yeah, you know, there's a lot of ways I guess you could say it's important that we are kinder and gentler both to ourselves and to others around us. And really, that's what my book's about, is how do we do that? Because when we do that, we end up being more successful and we end up, you know, being happier and more fulfilled.
Will you tell us the story of your background? You left a company that didn't exemplify those items,
right,
that you, those components that you feel so is so crucial, and you probably didn't even know at that point how crucial they were. And then you started your own company, and how you brought into the level of importance the things that you're talking about in the book.
Right. Well, you're right in that I didn't recognize what I didn't like. I mean, I knew in my gut that one of the jobs I had in leadership was not, didn't fit with me, but I didn't really have language around what that, why that was all, what that was all about. And then I was lucky enough to be recruited by Ken Lowe, whose idea HGTV was, and helped to, so I was his first hire. And so the two of us, you know, hired a lot of people, and we built a team, and our startup team was seven or eight people, and all, you know, together we built this amazing company that today lives on, and, you know, feel so grateful and pride that it does. I've been gone for a little while. But, yeah, so, but then when after I left that job, I looked back and I said, oh, my, I've had experiences with an amazing company, HGTV, and I've had experiences with the other kind of company, and then some in between. So if I could put that all together and really between my first book and my second, this Fully Human is my second book, if I could put that together, I could offer some guidance and some counsel to folks who are interested in that.
Susan, you're sort of examining the model, it seems to me, and I guess I could use a few names. Why not? You know, the old standard model is the McKinsey model. They come in and they consult and they help you form something that was birthed right out of Harvard Business School. And it often seems to result in success, but as you point out, it may not be achieving that success in a way that, I don't know, what would we say, is not sustainable over the long run because of all sorts of inherent reasons. And you are presenting an alternate model, and you're showing that it was extremely successful with the numbers that were thrown out. You know, the company was grown from scratch to being sold for $15 billion, that's an obvious sign of success. You know, the way that it functioned and the culture, the container that was held is different than the McKinsey Harvard Business School model, I think. Or am I reading too much into it? Is there just a lot of common ground and you've made some minor tweaks and found something that has built upon the old model as opposed to disrupting it?
Well, look, you know, a successful company is a composite of three things: a great idea, you know, a great product that's needed, good processes in place, so executing on it, and then a strong culture, a strong organization that backs it and believes in it. And the part that I don't, you know, I really can't speak to the McKinsey model the way you've presented it, but I can say that what a lot of leaders are missing today, they may have a great idea, they may even have good execution, but they're missing the third critical leg of the stool, which is, you know, how is my, what's the culture like in this place where I'm leading it? How are people feeling about their jobs? Do they feel ownership in their work? Are they fulfilled in their work? Are they having fun? All of those things, which I put under this large umbrella of emotional wellness or fitness, emotional fitness for, is my language in the book. And there's many leaders today that it's not even on their radar to consider that. And those organizations, you know, what's happening today is newer workers are saying, I can't relate to that leader. They're not likable, they're not trustworthy, or they're, you know, they're barely human. And so they leave. And so what I did in writing the book is think about what are those sustaining elements? You know, how do we keep organizations healthy, both economically healthy and emotionally healthy? And that's a lot of what the book is about.
And you talk a lot about building trust, and that's a really interesting concept, because I think in a culture, everybody's attempting to build trust. But what made your experience focus on trust, and how would you say what was a successful model in building trust versus some of the other places that were not successful in doing that?
Well, so the second part of the book, there are three steps, and the second step is trust and trust building. And I chose that emotion for a couple of reasons. One, in my experience at HGTV, it was the most powerful emotion that we had that bound us together to be successful. I also chose it because it was the hardest emotion for me. When I got to my job at HGTV at 39 as in COO, I didn't have a whole lot of trust in the past for folks that I worked with. And through this group of people, I mean, really, they taught me what it meant to have trust. And so a lot of those lessons and stories are in this book. But it's important because it helps you to move with speed and focus. It helps to keep out some of the human messy dramas, you know, that can invade the workplace. So I have 10 tips about trust building, but I also talk about, you know, you only build trust, it's a reciprocal relationship. So one should only build it with those mm-hmm. worthy of it, worthy of receiving your trust. And so we go into the workplace and, with a willing heart to build it, but also a shrewd eye. Those people that aren't, you know, the cutthroat opportunists and smarmy bobs and those kinds of people that are all a part of some of the workplaces we've worked at, you know, you leave them aside, but hopefully you can find people where trust building is a possibility. And it's so rewarding if you can.
If you're just joining us, our guest is HGTV co-founder Susan Packard, who is also a widely published author. Her new book is called Fully Human, Three Steps to Grow Your Emotional Fitness in Work, Leadership, and Life. And Susan, you talk about part of emotional fitness is the ability to manage your own emotions and then read other people's emotions. And you just mentioned that a shrewd eye, allowing yourself to trust, but developing the eye for those who deserve your trust and have earned it. And a generalization for women is that we are more by nature, more trusting, more communicative, we have more empathy. And so I'm wondering where, as a woman, you see this helping propel into the C-suite, for example.
I belong to a number of senior women business leader organizations, and we've shared our stories, and, you know, some of them are wonderful, and some of them are really tough to hear. This is an overgeneralization, but it seems that the second part of emotional intelligence, which is that ability to read others. So there's the two parts. There's self-awareness of your emotions and managing them, and then there's the second part, which is reading others and responding appropriately. We do a really good job with that. Women do a really good job with that. And it was a reason that I was able to be elevated in organizations, because I have empathy, so I genuinely wanted to connect with people, and you know, I have a natural curiosity about people. So those things all weighed in my favor and helped me to, you know, rise in these organizations where I worked. But the problem with being a woman, a rising woman leader, is that there's an inverse relationship between being successful and being likable, at least as it is today. Yep. So the higher you rise in organizations, the less likable you are, which for men, the opposite, you know, there's a direct correlation. You rise in an organization, you're more likable. For women, for all kinds of reasons that have to do with our culture and conditioning and all of those things, finding that balance of expressing your, you know, your femininity as a woman, and but also taking on the mantle of leadership and power, which is a part of it, and not in a way that's not off-putting, is this delicate balance. And I talk a lot about that in my first book, New Rules of the Game. Mm-hmm. It's a tough balance, and you know, having strong EQ and emotional intelligence helps with that, because you can read rooms a lot more easily.
Yes. The thing that they say about all men negotiate salaries, while most women do not negotiate salaries. And when they do, they're perceived as being strident and, oh, the other word, right, I'm not going to say on air.
And bossy.
But, there we go, bossy. But what the,
that's
what
the nice B word.
There you go. What you bring to light is so important, because if you're wanting to negotiate and yet do it in a kinder, gentler way, say, reading the room is going to be so important. So that's a wonderful idea of bringing that to things that women typically don't do. And I wanted to quickly ask you about another group of people, and that's the millennial generation. There's so many generalizations about them, but you know, they, at the same time, they're looking for the something more in their workplace. Mm-hmm. They also mm-hmm. are people who, you know, are very accustomed to using technology and not really communicating in this way. And does it hamper their empathy and the things that you're talking about?
Well, I interviewed some university thought leaders, and one gentleman, Andrew Moore, he runs Carnegie Mellon's computer science department, and he said that, and of course he's got, you know, technologically, the kids that come into his program are so advanced, but he actually has a freshman class on working together in a team. That's all it is working together in a team. Because what's happened with those who really love today's technology and use it predominantly as a means of communication is that they're not as likely to come together and to build relationships, for example, of trust. They can't read emotions as well as others and things like that. And so it's a big issue. I think it's a workplace issue that, you know, we need to, for all kinds of reasons, we need to address, including people. We're human beings, and as human beings, we seek belonging. We want to be a part of, and that means physically being a part of. If the workplace is only your home, or, you know, or your car, or, you know, all I need is Wi-Fi, you miss this great opportunity to build community in an organization and build culture, build this, what we talked about a little bit earlier, the importance of building a sustaining titanium strength culture. Well, you build that face to face, heart to heart. Doesn't mean you can't have remote workers. Doesn't mean you shouldn't use technology. Obviously, all of that you need, but you need both. And we had both at HGTV. You know, we had central gathering places, and we had remote workers and who've relied primarily on technology to communicate. And that's fine, but what I would argue is you also need places where people can come and know one another in a physical sense. I mean, you know, person to person, in a room, as opposed to just on an iPhone.
Susan, earlier when we talked about sort of the foundational component of trust and the process, I hear you now speaking to another component that I would say is possibly foundational to an outcome, which you achieve through that process and by having strong emotional fitness. And you're talking about face-to-face interaction, heart-to-heart interaction, and being part of something. And I'd like to hear you talk about the ability to be present and how important that is and the level of being present. And I think you have stated that through your process, you found that you were able to be much more present with people, which I would think would be a key component to being part of a strong community.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's one of the reasons, one of the inspirations behind the title, Fully Human, is also about being fully present with people, and it's how the EQ Fit practice trains us to be. Being fully present is not easy, and especially it's not easy in our ADD culture today, and I raise my hand as one of them. It took a lot of practice for me to slow down enough to listen, to pause, to really be engaged with someone, to put down my iPhone, to whatever, you know, whatever it takes so that you're actually, and you're not thinking about the next thing you want to say, you're really trying to understand what someone is saying. That's a discipline. That's something that takes time. But when you do, one of the things that I recommend in the book is a meditative practice. That's one way to help train your mind. You know, we can retrain our minds. They talk about, the neuroscience talks about, you know, grooves in our brain. I think mine have ruts, not grooves. Pretty deeply embedded. But I've managed to detach from things by learning, you know, meditation has helped me to detach from things, including what's the next thing, so that I can engage with somebody person to person, heart to heart. And, you know, I think we're missing a lot of that today in our engagement with one another. So, yes, being fully present is a big part of the EQ Fit practice.
Do you have to slow down in order to achieve some of this? I mean, that there are so many distractions in the pace of life these days. Just seems, the tempo seems so high. Is it is the meditation part of just sort of slowing down to achieve a higher degree of success?
Well, you know, everything is sort of short-term and long-term, and you have to make choices about your time. We never have enough hours in a day. So what are your choices going to be? And for me, one of my choices was I learned meditation to help me get better grounded, you know, to settle better into myself so that I knew how to be the leader of my own life, because I couldn't lead others until I knew how to do that. And that meant, you know, what do I stand for? What are my core principles? All of those questions. And meditation helped me with that because it gave me a quiet, safe place. And I, you know, I've also gone on retreats, and I do retreats now. I teach it. I think it's that important. So slowing down, it may feel like that in the beginning, but when you take it on as a practice, other people actually comment, at least they have for me, in really positive ways about how, you know, I've actually been a better leader or a better worker, a better friend, because I've slowed down enough to pay attention to another person. I think that's just about our shared humanity, you know. We've done quite a number on dehumanizing mm-hmm. ourselves, you know, in the workplace and outside the workplace. So this is a little bit of a battle cry for let's get back to civility and, you know, good human values and really paying attention to what another person is asking of you or what their needs are. I mean, this is in the workplace and this is outside the four walls of the workplace, of course.
Yeah.
Both are where you can practice emotional fitness. And the three steps that I offer are a practice. It's not a one-shot deal. Once you do them, they become second nature, and they really help you to stay in this place of steadiness and peace of mind.
Our guest is Susan Packard, and the book is Fully Human, Three Steps to Grow Your Emotional Fitness in Work, Leadership, and Life. Susan, thank you. You've had some very well-placed comments today. We appreciate you joining us.
Thank you. I appreciate being on your show.